Hello and welcome to Actuarial People with myself, James Turner. I'm excited to be launching a brand new podcast where each week I'll be speaking with a UK actuary. My aim is to give you, the listener, greater insight into the people behind the profession and their personal career journeys. So we'll cover things like why and how they became an actuary, what they do on a day-to-day basis, how they balance work and study with life, any specialisms they've developed, and how their role has evolved over time. So whether you're an actuary yourself, or you're aspiring to become one in the future, welcome and enjoy. Please welcome to Actuarial People, Deanne Trivedi.
Hi James, nice to speak to you today.
Lovely to meet you, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yeah, the weather's not so great, but I'm coping with it somehow.
Yeah. Well, it was nice at the weekend where I am, but now it's, gone back into winter mode. But good start to the week nonetheless. So I wondered if you could just start by giving the listeners a overview of who you are and what you do today, and then we'll go back to beginning and work through from there.
Of course. So I am an actuarial apprentice. I'm currently working in the retirement sector, and I've been working at Willis Towers Watson for almost 9 months now.
Fantastic. Well, I wondered if you could, well, I was going to say cast your mind back, but I guess it might have been a bit more recent than some of the other guests. So how did you first discover that the actuarial profession existed?
So when I was at school, my dad noticed that I was always really good at like the statistics and probability side of maths, and I never really thought of anything about it. And then he kind of noticed that and he said, well, you know, there's a profession for that, right? It's called actuaries. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. That's cool. And I never thought I could do it because my perception was that everybody who was in this field had really accomplished qualifications and they, you know, been to school for a long time. But then I heard about the apprenticeship opportunity, and I know that some professions can be quite gate-kept in the sense that there's a certain barrier of entry. And I think sometimes actuary has this kind of misconception about it, but this apprenticeship just gave me the opportunity to break into a field where I didn't necessarily have to be in school for like 3 or 4 years doing a degree, and I feel very lucky to be here.
So tell us about your educational background then. What are your qualifications and at what point did you move into an apprenticeship?
Yeah, so I did 3 A-levels. I did maths, physics and chemistry, and I wasn't too set on going to university, so I took a year out, and then that year ended up being 2 years. And during that time, I worked part time. I thought I was going to be able to work full time to save up to go to university one day, but I kind of changed my mind on that. And I really wanted to, I felt as if I didn't have much of a career path. I was kind of working as a sales assistant, and I really wanted to do more. And after the 10th apprenticeship that I applied to, I landed it. So
fantastic. And were you applying just to actuarial ones, or did you spread it a bit wider than that?
So I was very open-minded at the time. I applied to, I think, over 50 places, and it wasn't necessarily apprenticeships, also internships and even non-paying jobs like volunteering. Mm-hmm. And I managed to get the callback for the apprenticeship, and I remember doing the video call, the video assessment, and I just did it off the cuff. I didn't prepare, and they ended up responding like the next hour.
Really?
And that was just like, I could not believe it.
And why didn't you prepare?
I think I got rejected by Lloyd's at the time, so I was like, okay, let's be real here, this is not gonna happen. and then yeah, I kind of went into it with no belief, and that turned into 100% belief when they said instantly that we want to call you back for an assessment centre.
Wow. So what was the process? Was the video the first stage, or was there lots of online applications form filling first just to get to that point?
So when I applied, I did a video assessment, and then that turned into it being an assessment centre with 3 other apprentices. And at the time, I actually applied to be an insurance professional. And then when I got the result for the assessment center, they said, we think you're great, but we don't think you're a right fit for insurance. So I kind of proposed to them, well, if you don't think that, then is there any opportunity for me to perhaps apply to any of your other apprenticeships? And they said, okay, here's a few that we have open at the moment. And I said, well, out of all of these that you've given me, I'd like to pick the actuary one. And they responded really well because they said, well, that's great because that's the exact one that we had in mind for you when we interviewed you.
Yeah.
So I think that really helped because their perception of what I can do matched with mine. And I think that's going forward into the interview, that's kind of what allowed me to do well and have a good relationship with the company.
Yeah. So the first video assessment, was there anyone on the other side of the screen, if you like, or was it just you recording to a camera some answers to some questions they'd given you?
So a lot of it was you got 2 minutes to prepare by yourself, and then you would send a 2-minute recording.
Okay.
And a lot of the questions were competency-based questions. There was one which was a maths test, but it was very, I can't even describe it to you. It was just very trivial and just kind of, it felt almost as if I was playing my maths at school. Right. I don't know if you remember that.
Bit long ago for me, but
yeah.
What were the questions? Do you remember? Or maybe don't give away the specifics, but give us an idea.
I can't speak on the maths one because I completely forgot. But I know apparently I did really well at them, so that's good. But I remember a lot of the competency ones were telling me about a time that you had a tight deadline or had to manage a project or showed great organizational skills. And those questions also came up in the assessment center and the interview. And I think generally preparing for those kind of questions, I noticed, I mean, this is not kind of, it's not a knowledge that a lot of people don't know. It's very common to know that competency-based questions are very commonly asked in interviews.
They are, but I mean, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. I don't want to talk too specifically about individuals, but somebody got in touch a few weeks ago and they'd been to this stage of a number of processes and weren't quite getting through. And I gave them a call and tried to help them work out why and give some advice and stuff. But I think with competency-based questions, everybody's heard of the STAR technique, but hearing about it and actually putting it into practice the right way and giving the company what they actually want to hear from it can be a different thing. Did that sort of come naturally to you, or had you answered those kind of questions so many times that you ended up getting better at them eventually?
So that's a very good point, because the interviews that I did, and I did quite a few competency-based interviews, this was the only one in which I got accepted. And I think the reason why was because the first impression that I made at the interview, and I did a very bold move because I have a very good memory. So I decided to remember the annual report figures for WTW at the time. Okay. And when they asked me, what do you know about the company? I just laid the groundwork for how much they made last year. And then little did I know, they flipped the slide and they said, oh, well, you actually caught us because this slide is from last year. Just that impression, I think, that sold them from the minute that they interviewed me.
Yeah, yeah. And then what about the assessment centre? How did you find that?
So that went well, but I remember them telling me that you've answered the questions well, but it's not quite what we were looking for this job role. And I found that very interesting, that it was more in the sense that your interests, it is interesting that they could tell that my interests lie in a more technical role rather than an insurance role, just from my answers. And that's the first thing that they told me, is that it's not necessarily the sense that the answers are wrong, but your answers are leaning towards more of a technical role in terms of how you'd position yourself in certain situations.
Mm. Okay. So they identify, well, you and them both identified that your real interest was aligned with actuarial. So then did you have to interview again for an actuarial role, or were you offered a position? Hi guys, we'll get straight back to the conversation in a second, Just a quick reminder that when I'm not recording podcasts, I specialise in helping pensions actuaries with their career moves, and I'd love to help you when the time comes to explore your options. I work with people at all levels, whether you have a couple of years' experience through to senior positions. My approach is different to most recruiters. I started my own business last year and work alone, which means I have zero pressure to hit targets and can just focus on giving the best possible help and advice. So whether you're thinking of making a move now, or would just like to understand your options for the future, please get in touch via LinkedIn or email james@turnerperkins.com. Back to the show.
I remember when I interviewed, it was remote and it was people speaking from the London office. I originally applied for the London office and they said, well, our actuary position is based in Reigate. So the first thing I did was I looked up where Reigate was or what it even is. Like a lot of people at the company, I found out. And I went there in person. And I think right off the bat, because I interviewed other companies at the time, it felt like a very welcoming environment. And I was just very surprised at, because I turned up 40 minutes early, because I wanted to make that a good impression. And the receptionist knew me. And it was just one of the things where, like, you don't really expect that at a company. You don't expect that level of kind of attention or, I guess, organization. He said, oh, you're Deanne, right? Yeah, they're waiting for you for the interview, even though I was 40 minutes early.
Yeah.
Things like that. I was like, wow, I've never had this before. And so that kind of got me off to a good start in the interview. Because I just felt very in line with what the company's doing.
Did they make you sit there for 40 minutes before you went up?
Or did no, and early? I think that's what sold me on it. if I had to wait for 40 minutes, I probably would have, you know, been a bit bored. But immediately, as soon as I got there, I got interviewed.
And what was the interview like?
It was very similar to the assessment center, which was interesting. They hadn't changed the format at all. And I think my answers were very similar, just a bit more detail. And it took a while to get back to me. I think it was like 2 months. They were going back and forth on whether, you know, whether someone else could get picked up for the role instead of me. Mm-hmm. But eventually they decided that I was the right person. At the time, I was just like, I mean, I couldn't have imagined to even have got an apprenticeship. If you told me that last year, I wouldn't have believed you.
At this point, when you're still at the interview stage, how much did you know about the role? Did you know it was a pensions role? Because I guess it could have still been investments or something like that. And even if you did you really understand what you'd be doing in the job?
So there was a lot of things which I kind of, I guess, rely too much on Google search. So when I found out about specifically that I was in pensions, I was a bit confused. I think a lot of my research was based on what an insurance actuary does. Mm-hmm. So there was a bit of, they had to clarify at times in the interview, no, it's more like we're doing this rather than that. And at least I was in the similar ballpark to what the actuary does, but I just got the wrong sector at the time. It was more of, I think, I was not expecting to be in, when they said retirement, I didn't really know. I feel like it's still quite a niche sector of an actuary, even in an already niche field.
Yeah. And then, so how does an apprenticeship work and how does it differ when you look at sort of people that go straight from uni to being an actuarial analyst on their graduate program versus where you went in? Is it pretty much the same or are there differences there?
So one thing I found very interesting is the company definitely kind of teaches that they are different. It's kind of at face value, kind of, because a consultant does a lot more qualifications to get to that point. It's kind of at face value, you can kind of, there's kind of a misconception that it could be consultant is not as, is like better than an analyst, but that's definitely not the case. And so the qualification that I'm working towards is to be a certified actuarial analyst.
Okay.
With the IFOA, and that does give me the option to take the exams to become a fellow. But I definitely think that the company, it's quite clear that they've nurtured the analyst side of it, with being technical specialist and then a consultant being a more client-faced role. So that's kind of, I'd say that's what I'm training towards, being more of on the technical side of things rather than client-facing.
Yeah. And do you have to take exams to become a certified actuarial analyst?
Yeah, so I currently will be sitting two exams, and the rest of it is modules that it all kind of takes place within the span of around 2 and a bit years.
So what does that look like? So I guess the guys on the traditional exams, they have their two sittings a year, and how many exams is it these days? 13, 14 exams to qualify. What does your study look like, and how do you fit that in around work?
So I'm going to be sitting one of my exams this Wednesday. So
okay.
Hopefully that goes well.
Yeah.
And then I'll be sitting another one in September. And then after that, I will be doing my endpoint assessment, which is a portfolio of all the modules and exams, the two exams that I've taken, in order to decide whether I pass the apprenticeship. So a total of two exams. And I guess, so you could say that my first one starts 9 months in, and then after a year, you take the second one.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. What are your views on how far you might take it? Do you just want to get the CAA done and then worry about everything else later? Or do you have one eye on maybe I could convert and get on the fellowship route?
Yeah, I think the great part of this apprenticeship is it's really highlighted how many options there are once you qualify.
Yeah.
So I honestly don't know, but I think I'm kind of lost for options. I feel like there's just so many paths that I can take. So I'm definitely thinking about it right at the end.
So tell us about the actual work then. So you're 8 or 9 months in now, but what was it like in your first sort of 2 or 3 weeks when you actually get started and start to get your head around what the job looks like?
Yeah, I remember being very scared and nervous, having only done A-levels, and a lot of the people that I work with are very accomplished and have done, you know, degrees in top universities. So I definitely felt quite kind of alone, in the sense that I felt as if I was not as qualified. And that kind of definitely played on my mind a bit in the first few months. But as I picked things up, I could definitely, everything became much more clearer. I think that's kind of what it is when you, it's kind of, when you're doing training, you know, the first few months, you kind of see, well, what is the point in all this? And then it's just that one moment where you kind of see how everything comes together.
Mm.
And it probably in, I'm going to say 2 months ago, that's kind of when everything became clear. And I kind of felt like I knew my place at the company and felt more comfortable with my role.
What led to that point? Was there something in particular you worked on or learned to that stage that helped it to come together?
Yeah, so I noticed, I mean, everyone notices in actuary, everything's very bespoke and everything's very unique across all kinds of work. And because of that, I spent a lot of time working on the fundamental concepts, but also even spending time reading reports and documents that were done to try and understand the wording, trying to understand how that kind of comes together in this part of the work. Because every kind of, when you do pensions, everything, every client you work with is very different.
Mm.
So I kind of spent a lot of focus on the clients that I'm with and really tried to understand, okay, so they do this. Why is it they do this? What's the history behind it? And then that just helped me apply myself so much easier.
What sort of things have you worked on so far?
So a lot of the work that I've been doing is to do with valuations of certain pension schemes, trying to see how well-funded they are. And it's been very busy for me in these last few months. And I've had the opportunity to pick up a lot of work that, you know, some people say would take, you know, 2 years into being at the company to pick it up. And I've been working on things like investment strategy proposal papers. And actually last week I managed to get my name on one of the papers.
Really?
And that, nice. I thought that would only happen, you know, 2 years in, or I thought it'd never happen, to be honest. But yeah, so something's going well, and that's what I've been doing recently, and I've been really enjoying it.
And how are you finding? You said earlier, I think you said you didn't know what Reigate was, but how are you finding it now? Because you know, I know some of the people there. I've been to the office. It's a really nice place. How are you fitting in? And what's it like working in Reigate?
That's one of the things that sold me. When I went to the interview, I was like, this office is great. And I could just tell the people that work there that it would be a really friendly and welcoming environment to be in. And now I'm very glad that I know where Reigate is and I can definitely locate it on a map. I do actually travel every day to Reigate.
Where from? Are you in London?
So I'm in Hertfordshire, which is 30 miles north of London. So I spend probably an hour and a half getting there and then getting back.
Yeah. Well, my commute from, I was in Teddington when I was in London, in sort of West London, but too far out to be on the tube. And that was to get from there to Barbican used to be an hour and 20. And that's if you got the timing right with the changeover. So even going from one place in London to another could be an hour and 20. To go from Hertfordshire to Surrey in the same time is, in my mind, not bad. And are you in the office every day? Or do you spend a couple of days at home?
So I used to commute probably 4 days a week. Recently, I've been limiting myself to 3 days a week. That's been working well. But yeah, I really do like coming into the office because of the environment. And I feel like I work better in the office. Some people, it's the opposite. But for me, it works really well. So yeah. I don't think that will be changing anytime soon.
Are there other apprentices that started at the same time?
In the Reigate office, they typically have two a year.
Okay.
And then in the London office for actuaries, there's also two a year. And there's a lot of insurance apprenticeships, but not very many actuarial apprentices.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a lot of, you know, when I meet the other apprentices, there's lots of what's an actuary? Where's Reigate? As coming back to that as well. And then, yeah, and also because of that, I feel like it's not as well known what the apprentices actually do at the company, but that kind of, as the years have gone on since the apprenticeship has started, it's become more and more clear how many different routes that you can take. And I think it's a very innovative thing to do considering what kind of field it is. I feel like I would hold it in kind of the same respect as if there was an apprenticeship for perhaps like an engineer or a lawyer, considering how many qualifications they have to take.
What's your understanding of the different routes that you could go down in the future?
So I can go down the route of becoming a fellow. I can also try and be more of a technical specialist. And that's actually quite a common one in recent years. In fact, a lot of the product owners of the things that we use at our company, the software tools, the product owners are actually analysts, which is very interesting to see. And this was before the apprenticeship started. So that's definitely a route. Even working towards the chartered apprentice risk analyst qualification, that's another route. And obviously staying in the same position, but just gaining more experience, that's definitely one. Or perhaps moving into another field, perhaps in investment or more of a software engineering route. There's a lot of options.
And does the idea of getting additional qualifications appeal to you? Or does it maybe... Obviously, you didn't fancy going to uni. So I'm just trying to get a sense of, is it sort of study and taking more exams? Does that put you off slightly or not at all? And actually, you'd love to get more qualifications in the future?
Yeah, well, when I was at school, I wasn't a very good student. So my teachers would probably say, you know, I don't think they'd even know that I could have landed an apprenticeship like this. And studying was never something that appealed to me, but I just find it much easier knowing how I can apply the work that I'm doing to the job role. And I think it was when I had that kind of the breakthrough moment where I was kind of studying all this time, trying to figure out, well, how can I even apply this? And then, you know, 6 months in, it actually happened. And then, you know, since then I've had more optimism about perhaps taking further exams, but I'm definitely someone who wouldn't want to do exams for the sake of it. I would definitely want to see how I can apply myself in those situations if I were to take them.
Yeah. So if it makes sense why you're taking them and how it's relevant, then absolutely.
Yeah.
But if not, then less interest. What have you enjoyed most so far?
I honestly, my colleagues will not agree, but I enjoy the really busy periods. So when we get to do it, so in the last few months, we did a lot of the valuations for a lot of pension schemes, and I found that really enjoyable. Just kind of, you know, finding out how doing this calculation plays into this. And I feel very lucky that I'm kind of coincidentally working with clients that I feel very aligned to, or I have a certain, I could kind of, it almost feels coincidental in the way that I'm working with certain clients that I kind of see in my day-to-day life and have a connection with. So that's something that I feel very lucky to have as well.
Because in Reigate, they have, you know, a lot of their biggest clients, huge clients. So I imagine, I mean, don't name any, but I imagine they're brands that you've heard of, as opposed to, you know, companies that you didn't know existed. So it must be quite an exciting client list, I imagine.
Yeah, and also weirdly coincidental, the kind of clients that I've gotten to work with that I actually enjoy kind of seeing on a day-to-day basis, the kind of products that they make and the innovations that they have. So just a weird coincidence, I guess.
What's been the most challenging thing so far?
I think definitely sometimes there's been quite intense training sessions. That is something, kind of balancing the study and the work. When I first joined, I found that very difficult, and I was just trying to understand how I can make this work. Kind of thought it wouldn't be manageable. I didn't think it was possible to have a work-life balance when balancing study and work, but I've managed to make it work in recent times. And I think sticking to kind of a routine and cutting yourself off when you think maybe you're working too much, or you think, oh, I really need to do this. So that's something that I've had to pick up.
Can you tell us more detail around how you've worked through that, just in case there's someone else out there that, you know, maybe they haven't quite figured it out yet and they're struggling to get the balance right? Are there any practical bits of advice you give someone?
I'd say I'm not the best person to go to in terms of balance, but what I will definitely say is the one kind of advice I'd give is, what's different about working and being at school is the level of communication that you have to get. It feels almost like everything has to kind of come from you and be in your own terms. So you really, at work, you really do have to take charge and you have to communicate effectively. And it's all on you to kind of make it work for yourself. And that's something at school, which I find is a complete opposite, because at school, it feels as if, oh, you're given this piece of homework, you're given this exam, you know exactly what you need to do. But at work, it's that level of communication with your colleagues, but it's about you kind of stepping in, having the confidence to do it yourself. That's something that's a complete opposite to what people at school are taught. And that's something that I've observed is the skill that I've had to learn to pick up. And I think it's a very useful skill as well.
And what do you do outside of work? So now you've got work, study, and a little bit of time on the side for personal life. What do you get up to when you do have time?
I'm definitely someone who picks up different hobbies all the time. So every few months, maybe I'll change my hobby. Right now I'm working. So I have a black belt in karate, and now, okay, I want to kind of apply myself to boxing, as well as I'm trying to achieve a sub 25K. So I definitely try and keep myself busy with exercise. That's the thing that I try to do.
I'm a bit like that, except I probably have the same five or six things that over the years they come back in cycles, and I'll do something, I'll go all in, and then something will just break the habit and I'll go, right, what am I going to do now? Pick the next thing. But it tends to be picking from a smaller list. Martial arts is probably on that list, but never done it for more than 12, 15 months in one go. So anyone that's got to black belt level, I admire. How old were you when you did that?
I became a black belt when I was 13, I think.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I did it for 7 years at the time. I was just lucky I was in the right place at the right time, because I remember kind of when I was at school, karate was everyone, it was something that everyone picked up. And then I was just someone who stuck with it. And then I ended up getting a black belt at the end of it.
And now you're sort of getting new hobbies all the time. What happens? What causes you to drop one and pick up another one?
I think I'm quite competitive. So I feel like I also do tennis as well. And I'm always trying to, I feel like if I can't win at something, I'll just try another sport. So when I do tennis, I was enjoying it, but I wasn't like winning when I play tournaments. I was like, oh, okay, let's try another sport. And then I just keep oscillating. But it makes great for the general knowledge quizzes. When you have like lots of hobbies, it means you just have a lot of good general knowledge. So I'm very useful in a pub quiz.
What are you best at? What do you win at?
I'd say tennis is definitely up there. I have stuck with it for a while. I used to play cricket. I'm okay at football. I love playing it, but I'm not the best at it. And I'd probably say I do like reading quite a bit, but I also like kind of expanding my knowledge. So there was a period where I did actually kind of debate going into perhaps doing a physics degree, which is something that you kind of alluded to previously in terms of what I would have done at university. And that is probably one of my other kind of interests, kind of expanding my knowledge and learning new things.
Which area of physics?
I think I would have done astrophysics. It was something that at school I felt like wasn't taught enough of. And kind of the more I learned about it, the more my curiosity peaked. So I definitely probably would have done that.
Yeah. Well, I did do that, but about 50% of the content wasn't the stuff that I wanted to learn about. Yeah. I kind of wanted to learn about the stuff that you might, you know, if you pick up an astrophysics book and it's about the universe and planets and all that kind of stuff, that is up my street. But it's the other half that you have to learn. I mean, I'm not going to give examples now because it's not supposed to be about me, but yeah, about 50% of it wasn't so useful. So actually skipping the degree, but just reading about the parts that that you're most interested in, you can go a long way that way as well. Any advice you would give to someone who's just starting now? Let's say they've got an apprenticeship and it starts in May. Anything that they could maybe do before they start to help them, or anything that they should keep in mind for their first few months in the job?
I definitely think learning different softwares can make your life a lot easier. And okay. It can also helps you find solutions. And that's something that I've kind of discovered, is that being able to use certain tools and software to solve problems like Microsoft Excel or VBA Basic or even Python is really useful to have, because it means, okay, if you have an idea for something, it's a lot easier to execute it if you have that kind of knowledge. I think the advice that I would give to apprentices starting in the role, which is something that I wish I did, would be to back yourself in all situations. So kind of really throw yourself out there, and even if you think you can't do something, you should definitely try it. And that's really helped me, kind of, even if you're just slightly unsure, you know, if you want to pick up this task but you're just not quite sure how it would be done, I'd still say just to put yourself out there, because learning how to do it can, you know, get you so far, and it means that next time you can actually pick that thing up and go further, and it just increases your development. So that would be my advice, to just keep volunteering to pick up different things, pick up different pieces of work, to try new things.
Can that be difficult to do, in terms of, do you need to be quite confident to, does it feel like you're putting yourself out of your comfort zone when you do that, and when you volunteer for stuff?
I think the thing that was always playing in the back of my mind is that I never wanted to like be intrusive and kind of interrupt people. You know, I never wanted to kind of put myself too out there, and kind of, you know, it felt like I was being nosy almost. And I think that's something that's not true at all. And I kind of realized that it's actually really good to kind of oversharing is better at the beginning rather than kind of not doing it. And that's the kind of thing that I would say is more important. So it does take confidence, but I think it just also, you kind of have to believe that, rather than thinking that people are too busy or they're not willing to help you, just kind of believing that actually that's the complete opposite.
When you were applying, I think you said you applied for 50 plus different roles that covered different things, not just actuarial. If someone could have told you, actually, this is what you'll be doing, would you have believed them?
Probably not, because my perception was that I didn't have the knowledge to be able to do that kind of career, or I didn't have the problem solving ability. But having kind of worked on that and realizing that things like that are teachable, I'm just very glad that, as I mentioned earlier, I kind of backed myself and put myself forward for that opportunity. So I'd probably say, you asked me a year ago, definitely not. I think I wanted to be an MI6 agent a year ago, but didn't quite happen.
Did you apply?
I did. I tried the first round, and they were like, "Oh, you're close, but just haven't quite got the mark we were hoping for."
I'm not sure if I believe you. Maybe you did get in, and this is just
Yeah, it could be. I'm actually, you know, this is my cover as an apprentice.
I'll ask you this, just to interest in your thoughts, really. I ask most people, how do you see the role of an actuary evolving over time? I appreciate it's early days for you, but do you think about that much? Not in terms of what you will personally be doing, but what pensions actuaries will be doing in 10, 15 years' time?
I think the one thing that a lot of people I know kind of mention is, as DB schemes are closing, that, you know, what is going to happen to the future, the work that we do. And the more I work on, you know, DB schemes, the more I realize that there's so much more going on. And I think things like climate change, the effects of mortality rates, economic growth. And I think being an actuary is so dependent on the stability of the economy. And in like the uncertain times that we have, it does mean that there's a lot of work for us to do in terms of how to give people a fair, you know, amount of pension, or how to revalue things correctly based on the risk of the future. So I think there's so much work that's going to be done. I think the future of actuaries is very bright, and I think it's a really high demanding field. I think we need more actuaries, and I think spreading more awareness about what it is a really positive thing.
My final question is, what are you looking forward to in the next 12 months? And that can be inside of work or outside, or one of each.
I think I'm definitely looking forward to volunteering myself for different tasks and picking up new types of work, and hopefully gaining more responsibility. As I kind of cross my first year of being an apprentice, it will mean I'm more of a mentor towards the new apprentices and new grads that come into the business. So that's something that I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to gaining that kind of opportunity to teach people the things that I wish I knew.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on. As I say, you're the first apprentice that I've spoken to, and it's really interesting getting a feel for how you got into it and how you're enjoying it so far. And I love, as you say, the openness, that you haven't got to worry too much around exactly what you do next, whether you take up any other qualifications, just absorbing everything you're doing, enjoying it, and you know, great things will come, I'm sure. So thanks again for sharing your experience with us, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm just very happy to share my perspective. And I think it's a really important one to have in this day and age where there's just so much confusion on what to do. And this is just one of those examples where you can just throw yourself in a field that you don't necessarily know, and something can come out of it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Actuarial People. Please don't forget to subscribe and consider leaving a review. If you have any questions or feedback, or any suggestions for future guests, please contact me on info@actuarialpeople.com. This podcast is sponsored by my recruitment company, Turner Perkins, and you can contact me there at james.turner@turnerperkins.com. Hope to see you again.